something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Minnie Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Minnie Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Listen to the highly anticipated 100th episode of Tank and Jay Valentine's R&B Money Podcast with artist Chris Brown.
Even working with you from Kerry Hilson, Adonis, back in the day, I was 15, 14 doing that album. So like I said, I was in school like, okay, this is how you do it. This is how you make a song. There's a verse, a pre-chorus, and then a hook. I didn't know none of that.
You learned that over a summer, bro.
That's what it felt like.
That's what it felt like.
Listen to R&B Money on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch it when you can, dropping knowledge from fatherhood to politics, shouting out comics, just paying homage. What's up, Tiff? Yeah, you know she ready. Chi-Town's on, speaking to the grown and sexy. Hey. We gon' laugh, cut up and kick it, and at the end, we leaving with just to lift your spirits, make you wanna revisit. Tell your friends, take a listen. Young folks say it's lit, old folks say we dig it. Hey. Can't no bitch do what you do. Hey. Can't no bitch do what you do. Hey. Can't no bitch do what I do.
Hey, this is comedian Flame Monroe, and welcome to this week's episode of Laugh and Learn. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a very special week. I am in New York City with the GOAT himself, the one and only Mr. Dave Chappelle. It's his birthday week, and it is his first time headlining at Madison Square Garden. So I am here. I've been at all the shows. I'm thinking I'm going to get on Saturday. But bigger than that, right now, I am sitting here waiting to have a conversation with one of the most pertinent and important comedians of our lifetime, because I watched this woman even when I was studying. I'm always going to be a student of comedy until I'm gone from here. That's what I will always be, as a student. And I am with the one and only, the Asian wonton, the beauty, the diva, the one and only Miss Margaret Cho, ladies and gentlemen. Y'all make some noise for Margaret Cho.
Hi. Thank you.
Hello, gorgeous.
Hello.
Oh my God, Margaret. I have been such a fan of yours for such a long time. I am so grateful that you came to do this with me. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, this is wonderful. I'm very excited.
So I know you grew up in San Francisco, Margaret, and you're a Sagittarius, because my friend is not a partner, but my friend is a Sagittarius. Her birthday is the 15th. You are the 5th. Yes. Tiffany Haddish is the 3rd. I know a lot of Sagittarius.
Yes.
Was comedy your dream when you was a kid? Is that what you wanted to do?
Yes. Absolutely. I never wanted to do anything else. I still don't, I think. But I love acting, and I love doing all that kind of other stuff, like whatever that is, and music too. But I will always do stand-up comedy. It's a thing that really, I don't know. I think most comedians, as you know, we just do this, and we know that we do this. Yeah. We're just born kind of knowing.
Let me ask you a question from a comedian's perspective, Margaret, because when there are days when my children get on my nerve and I'm having a rough day, but I still have a show to do, and you try to remove all of the negative so you can take it to the stage. But have you found out that with all the drama, once you hit the stage, it all disappears anyway, because you're like, I got a microphone, I got an audience, let's go.
Yes, exactly. And sickness and any kind of, because you have that adrenaline that pushes you through, because you're just like doing the thing that you're supposed to do. You know, we just know we're supposed to do it. So anytime I've gone to do a show and been sick, it lifts just for the performance time. And then I go back and I'm sick again when I leave the stage. But it's really interesting how the body knows we're supposed to do this. The body knows and it falls right into place.
Yeah. It is such a therapy for us. And I think a lot of people in the audience don't really understand. We're there to make you laugh, but you all are there to make us feel better.
Right. It's a healing thing. It's a healing.
Yeah.
But it's also like it's pretty spiritual. You know, when you know you're doing the right thing in your life, then it really makes sense. Like, so I think that it really heals me from the inside out.
Yeah. You know, Margaret, and I know you are a great supporter of the LGBT community. I am a part of the LGBT community. I get a lot of backlash from our community because of my stance of how I feel about biological women, what I see a biological woman is to me, how important that is to me. But I was actually taken aback because I didn't think that you were going to take the interview. I'm just being very honest with you. This is a conversation more so than an interview. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate you coming on, because they give me a lot of BS because of how I feel. I don't try to discredit anyone, but I just feel like we can get along in unison as trans women and as biological women. I just think that we can gel together, but I get a lot of backlash. So again, I want to say thank you for coming on.
Thank you. No, it's so important. I think that, you know, being queer myself, I grew up within the trans community, within the queer community, within the gay community, and I've never seen as much unity as I do now. You used to be, I think it's like before AIDS too, like a lot of us were very separated, you know, the men and the women, the trans, the bi, everybody was in their own like area. And then we came together, I think, because we needed to. So I'm very, very supportive of the trans community, very supportive of unity within the queer community.
Do you think that it's now, with all of the transparency, with all the unity that's public, do you think it's better now, or do you think that it was better 20 years ago?
It's better now. It's better now. We have a lot more of a presence of the idea of how to talk about being trans. We didn't have an understanding of it 20 years ago. We didn't have an understanding of it 5 years ago, you know, and now we have much more awareness, much more education about it. We have a lot more vocal activism going on, very like present activism, especially in social media. So I think we know more, but we don't know enough. We need to know more.
Yeah. I love the opportunity the opportunities that have been afforded to us. We have girls that are making millions of dollars of doing what we love to do, which is drag shows or stand up or, you know, hosting or what have you. And I love those opportunities that are afforded to us. I just hate that some of the younger generation feel so entitled that they don't want to respect the ones that made a way for them. And I'm not saying any names, but it's just a lot of that. But that's neither here nor there. Being coming out as a queer as a comedian, Margaret, was that, did you find that challenging? Because after Ellen came out, you know, she got a lot of blowback, she got a lot of pushback, she lost a lot of opportunities. Did you find that that was part of your story?
Yeah, but it, you know, it's interesting because if you look at comedy itself, the majority of the women in comedy are gay, almost all of them. I mean, and if they aren't gay, they have like gay tendencies, or they're totally butch in their spirit. You know, they may like dick, but they have a butch heart. So if you look at, like, you know, people like Wanda Sykes and Rosie O'Donnell, the people that are like really like famous always had that side to them. I mean, whether they were talking about it on stage, you know, that came a little bit later, but it was something like when you're in comedy, there's always the queerness. I think there's just always there.
Yeah. Have you found, because I love the familiarity of that you use your family, especially when you do your mom and everything.
Thank you.
Because Joe Coy talks about his mom. And I love the fact that you guys have let us in, because you Asian people were very private. They were very selective on who they allowed to inside their little circle. But the show, Fresh Off the Boat, really opened up how the Asian community is and how they talk, and they were fun and exciting, because if you're not a part of that, they really don't let you in. So I love when you and Joe Coy talk about your mom and does the accent. That is so great to me. Do you find that that is your best comedy when you emulate your mom or your family as opposed to just talking about who you are?
Absolutely, because it's a very present truth that I think anybody can identify with, is that people, parents that are from another generation, from another country, who are just kind of seeing the life that you have here and kind of trying to connect with it. So, you know, for me, it's a really, it's a very Asian part of myself to talk about my family. Also, but I love the when you slip into a character, that is like, you know, to me, it's very classic, like comedy of, you know, whatever, like it's the outsider point of view.
Yeah. And we would have never been privy to that had it not been for comedians like yourself and for like Joe, because y'all let us in. Asian people are such a private unit. You know, they really don't let people in. So I love the fact that we were able to come in to see all of that. What is your dream arena to play, Margaret, as a comedian?
Well, I would love to do Madison Square Garden like you're going to do. I've never done it.
Me too.
I'm looking forward to that. I mean, what a great opportunity, and what an event. So for me, that's like the ultimate. Also, Carnegie Hall was really great. It just adds a level of establishment to what you're doing. It's classy. I also just love a comedy club. I love a nightclub, very like raunchy, very safe. You can say whatever you want. To me, that's the best.
Yes, that is the best. That is absolutely the best, Margaret. I would love to see you play the part of the person in Kinky Boots. I know it's a drag queen.
That's great.
But I would love to see you do something like, I think that you can pull that off, Margaret.
I love
it. You are so familiar, and you have been a fruit fly. And that is my terminology for people who have been allies for the gay community.
Yes.
You were a fruit fly long before you became, you know, you announced that you were queer. You were a fruit fly. And this is one of my things. I don't want the 10 or 12 disgruntled loudmouths to chase the only allies from the LGBT community that we have ever had, which are biological women. Biological women have always been allies of the community, always.
Yes, of course.
And I never want to lose that. So sometimes I get a little opposition because of the way I feel. But yeah, I would love to see you do something like that, Mark. I think that would put a twist on it, because they always say that, look at how popular Victor Victoria was.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a woman playing a man pretending to be a woman. You know, that
Incredible.
Would be, Margaret, I think you could do that.
I love it.
And I think the whole visual of it all would be great, because I was walking past and I saw the sign Kinky Boots. And I remember I said, Margaret could probably pull this off big time. That would be so fun.
I would love it. Thank you.
So movie-wise, because I know everybody's on strike right now, woo-woo-woo, do you have a dream role that you would like to play?
I just want to just keep working. You know, like, it, they used to not have Asian people in movies, so this is, like, really new that it just started. And so,
Michelle Wu changed the game.
Yeah,
Michelle
incredible.
Yeoh changed the game.
Incredible. So hopefully that, you know, I don't care what it is, you know, like, and it's sad because I never had the real opportunity to dream. I never dreamed so big about movies and TV because it just wasn't an option for me. Like, I was just, I'm going to be a stand-up comedian forever, which is actually great too. But, you know, like, I never let my imagination go of what I could be as an actress. So I'm, you know, I'm really just, I just want to work and I don't care what it is. But I'm very excited that finally we're seeing Asian people in movies.
So do you think that because having representation and seeing the representation, that it'll open up a plethora of work for you, possibly?
Yes, I hope so.
I believe that.
That's my dream. You know, that to me is like the ultimate, because comedians also make great actors. You know, we've seen it time and time again with people like Robin Williams. And, you know, I just think we just have that ability. We can sort of do, if you can do comedy, you really can do anything in entertainment. And so I really do believe that.
Yeah, I would love to play a dark role when I get a movie. Mm-hmm. I would love to play something dark and gritty, and because I'm like, everybody know you can be funny. I don't want to be funny. I want to be something else.
Yeah, well, we could do it all. You know, I think because comedy like really lends itself to all of the emotions. So as an artist, you have every color to work with on your palette. So all of the different shades of gray are there. What I'm thinking of is something like Monique in Precious. She's so gritty and scary in that, you know, and there's something that, you know, she really, that one of my favorite Oscar winning performances from a comedian, no less. So that's great.
Yeah. And have you worked with Wanda and Paige? Because when I did Netflix, They Ready with Tiffany Haddish, Wanda and Paige, Pusher Productions were producers on there.
Yes.
So they were pretty dope. They were trying to get me to be something else, but they were pretty dope. They were really nice women.
They're so great. And I've been such a fan of both of them in, you know, so many different ways. But yeah, I definitely love, I just love Wanda's comedy, and I love the way that they work together. So they're great.
Yeah. Yeah. Wanda is, they just reached out to me recently. So hopefully something will jump off from that. But you know, so Michael, you don't have any children, huh?
No, I have a dog who is barking here. I have three cats. I have many, many animals around me, but I don't have any children. I guess it just never happened for me, but I don't know. I can barely take care of myself, but it's great to have kids. I think it's so amazing, but I just don't have any.
I love that people with no children always say that it's great to have children. You can borrow one of mine anytime you like. Good God, they're a little darker than you, but you could borrow any one of them.
I think I'm afraid of loving somebody so much, you know,
and like that does happen.
I don't want to love anybody that much. Like, I'm very happy being single. I'm very happy in that life. Like, I just don't want to be beholden to another person that I made. That to me is just so intimate and intense.
Yeah. How has the strike affected your work?
Well, I was supposed to do about 5 different movies from the summer on into the fall, and everything is just, we can't do anything. And so it's a really, it's interesting because it's made it possible for me to just sort of take a break because I was really busy, but I'm also on tour doing stand-up still as well. So, because I would do my works on the movie like for the week, and then I would go out on the road on the weekends. So I had like a very packed schedule. Now I'm just going out on the weekends, which is fine too, but it's certainly different. I really wish they would resolve it, but we have to find a solution because, you know, they've been treating actors so unfairly for such a long time. So this is the only way we can finally have some resolution.
It's the effect of AI. They try to replace us with AI, Mark. It's going to be real hard to replace me with AI. I got a lot of extra parts.
You cannot be replaced. I mean, it's just like you missed the real deal. I think that comedy in particular is the one area where you really cannot recreate it. You cannot. There's no way.
Hey, Drew Scott here, and I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hey, girlfriends. It's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more.
Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
I want to know who your dream to share the stage with as far as being doing stand-up. Who is the dream artist that you would love to share a stage with?
Well, I would love to do more with Ali Wong. I've worked with her in the past, and you know, I really love her. Also, Sabrina Wu is incredible. Also, Sherry Cola. You know, I would just love to work with Wanda again. And I just, you know, I just want to work. Like, I think every time I get to go out and do shows, it's to me so miraculous and so exciting, yeah. Especially, you know, at my age, it's really incredible to still do it. You know, I've been doing it for 40 years, so it's great to keep on going.
Margaret, we're only in our 30s. Don't do that. We're only in our 30s.
That's right. We're just, you know.
It's been a hard knock life, but we're in our 30s.
That's right. That's right.
I watched one night I had took a edible and I watched your special. I don't even remember the name of it. I was just channel surfing and you were on doing the jokes about your mom. It's the facial expression. Oh my God. Listen to me. It was amplified 20 times because I had taken an edible.
I love it.
It was the funniest thing to me. Oh my God.
I love it.
I was like, I wonder, does she know if she passed out edibles to an audience and they watched it, it would be 10,000 times funnier. Oh my goodness.
That's great. I mean, you know, that's a good idea. Maybe I should, you know, have like a whole thing beforehand and everybody take it at the same time. But then it's so unpredictable because sometimes people just fall asleep and then some people just get horny. And then some people can't pay attention. You know, the people that can't pay attention when they have an edible, they're just like all over the place.
Right.
So, but that's a good idea.
Have you faced them? So, Margaret, before it has become so popular to be just who you are, because it's not about Asian or black or white, did you find discrimination as being a female Asian comedian? Because I know what females go up against, because comedy is a male-dominated field. I portray a female, but I have a very masculine alpha male spirit. Have you found a lot of opposition and a lot of pushback from just being an Asian female comedian?
Yeah, but the way that it came out was invisibility. Like, it just didn't have any opportunities, you know? And then I would just, like, what was good about it is that it made me different. So then I stood out, like, when I was starting comedy in the 80s, like, it was, like, good because they would remember me because I was just nobody like me at all. And so that was promising. But then, like, when it came to trying to break into TV and movies, I couldn't catch a break. Like, it was very hard to get roles. It just, there weren't anything written for Asians. There were just no roles out there. And so it was really very tough. But stand-up always was a place that was welcoming, even though it's very male-dominated, even though it's very white. The fact that I think identity is currency. You know, we have a lot of value because we are different. And then the audiences will remember that. And that's the only thing that is, like, true in comedy. So, and usually, like, if you're funny, you're going to make it no matter what. So there's very few people that actually are truly funny. It's weird how few people are really, really funny. It's so amazing, though, because when you have the ability, you can really do it.
Yeah. It was, when I started, we had to do either alternative nights. They had to have a gay night or a black night or a trans night, trans woman night. I'm like, how about, I just want to be a comedian. I don't want to be all those other adjectives. I just want to be on the comedy show.
Yeah.
So I had to keep doing stuff like that in order to prove to them that I was, you know, I had the chops, because it's what you said. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people out here that have the title of comedian that,
they're not, but you can tell, like, people are in it just because they want to be seen, because they're like, oh, well, I'm an actor, but I'm going to try this for a while so the people can see what I do. But there's a very big difference between somebody that is genuinely a comedian, funny, and, like, knows they have to do it, as opposed to people who just sort of do it as a means to something else.
Yeah, it is very tough. It is very tough. I would like to see you. Margaret, you know, I think that you, because I've watched you on interviews and I've heard you speak to so many different people, why haven't you tried to get a talk show? I don't even think we have any Asian women that have actually had a really good talk show out?
No, there haven't. That I would love to. I would love to. You know, I've never, I've never been approached for that, but I would love to do that. That would be great. Oh, there's Lisa Ling. Lisa Ling does more sort of one-on-one sort of things, and she goes and travels all over the world. And
yeah, but her stuff is mostly
serious.
I'm talking about from a comedic aspect, from an act, and everybody likes you, Margaret.
I know.
You got a great reputation in Hollywood.
Yeah.
I think that would be great because you would come in from a whole different perspective.
Let's do it. You can be on it with me. Let's do it together.
I could be your Ed McMahon.
Fabulous. Fabulous. I love
it. See, the dog even agrees.
She does. She loves it.
Oh, Margaret, you think that, I would like to see them remake some movies with different females. Like, I would love to see a Charlie's Angels with an Asian woman and a Latino woman and a Black woman, you know? Or even a comedy like 9 to 5 with an Asian woman.
Oh, that'd be great.
That would be so great because I'm telling you, because now we see that it doesn't have to look like this. It can look like this and still be successful.
Absolutely.
And I'm loving that. And I wish they would give more opportunities to Asian women and people of color to try different things.
Right.
I think we'll be wildly successful.
I agree. Because people want to see themselves. People want to see their stories. And they want to feel like they exist in the world. You know, we just have such a long history in cinema where it's just whites. It's just whites. I mean, and the films are still great, but it's just like we just haven't been able to see ourselves for so long.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was the reason that the show All in the Family, they had a character on there. Her name was Beverly LaSalle in 1974. I was 9 years old. And when I saw the character, I cried for an hour because I kept thinking that there was something wrong with me. So seeing it, transparency, and being able to visualize, especially on TV, I was like, especially Norman Lear just had his finger on the pulse.
That's right.
So many years ago. It made me know that you're going to be okay. You are actually going to be okay because you see somebody that looks like you.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
That is why it was so wonderful for Dave to embrace me into his fold, because when all the backlash happened with Dave and his jokes about the trans community, and Dave and I have had conversations, Margaret, and I told him, when you did Sticks and Stones, I thought you were a little phobic. I did. I thought you were a little bit. But you met somebody from San Francisco. Her name was Daphne Dorman, a trans woman who wanted to be a comedian. And she changed your mind because you had a conversation with somebody that didn't look like you, that didn't dress like you. But you took the time to realize, I'm talking to another human being. I'm talking to another American. And, you know, I hate that she killed herself because of whatever the drama was going on in her personal life. May she rest in peace. But to me, she opened up his mind to be able to accept somebody like me. So he saw somebody that liked me, that looked like me. Mm-hmm. And now we are friends because of somebody like her. Yeah. That is where I want us to get to in this world, because everybody is feuding and you don't look like me, so we can't get along. And we're all Americans. Mm-hmm. Margaret, you're an American. Mm-hmm. I am an American. We may look differently, but we are all Americans.
That's right.
But we won't get that. We want to fight. Everybody wants to fight, Margaret. I don't want to fight.
I don't want to fight. I'm a lover, not a fighter.
I want to be pretty and funny and make
money.
That's right. That's all I want to do.
That's right. Me too. You're great. You've got the right idea. Let's just do that.
Right. That's the name of the show. Pretty, funny, and making money. Good.
Yes.
God. Oh, Margaret. It is powerful to think that. So have you been discriminated in your faith? Have you had discrimination in the comedy rooms in your faith? Because I've had it in my faith.
Yes.
I don't want you to name the names, but I want to hear the story.
The first one of the first shows I ever did, I didn't have a headshot because I was so young. And I went into the club and they had taken an illustration, a racist caricature from the 1890s of a Chinese railroad worker, like with buck teeth, and eating a bowl of rice with chopsticks and spraying the rice everywhere. Like a racist caricature for my picture. Like, can you imagine? Like, I was just a kid. And I just remember telling them, you have to take that down. Like, I was shaking. Like, I was like, how is that? How are you? That's, you can't put that on. That's not appropriate. And it was like, you know, so bad. And, you know, things like that happen, like, often. But it's mostly out of just sheer ignorance, not really like they didn't mean to be racist. They didn't know, which is like so dumb, but it's really, that's so bad.
Yeah. Well, that was back then. You said you were very young. Now people know. So now they know better.
Yeah.
So like they said, if you know better, you do better. That's not necessarily always the truth.
Right.
But when you know better, now you can get called out on it is what can happen.
Right. But horrible. There was just like been stuff.
I hate that.
It's so terrible. But then there was stuff that I have to laugh. Because one time somebody took a picture of me. I was on the side of the stage and I was eating, you know, those Chinese food boxes, the white ones.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was eating with chopsticks out of it. And I was just like really chowing down on them. And somebody took a secret picture and posted it. And I had to laugh because that was just, it was so racist. It was like a caricature, but it was me. I'm eating those wontons. I'm not trying to act like I'm not eating them. And I had my hair up like in a top knot that was all kind of coming out. And there was a chopstick in there. I mean, it was just, it was very racially insensitive, and I was doing it to myself.
Well, that's, the difference in that is, at least that was you, and you owned that. The other picture was not you.
No, but it's so funny.
Starting with the buck teeth, I would have been like, okay, my problem was the buck teeth.
That's so racist. So terrible.
Oh, my goodness. I have those stories. So I get and I understand. But I believe that because we have become dinosaurs in this profession. We are so much older. We have taken so many of the beatings for people coming behind us that we made it easier for the young Asian comedians coming up, or for the young trans or gay comedians coming up. Because I was in the clubs and I was invisible for years to the comics, Margaret. I was invisible to them. I would go and wreck the stage. But in the green room, I couldn't get a fist bump. I couldn't get a hello. I couldn't get a good job. I couldn't get a pat on the back. So it made you feel like, oh, why am I even doing this? But there's a fire in you, especially when you hit that stage that you got to like blaze it. But
you do
want the love of your constituents. You do want the feeling of good job. You know, that was tight. Punch up my joke if you hear something. But it took a long time to get that. So I love that you have those stories because they made you this Margaret Cho.
Yeah. Thank you. But yeah, it is hard, you know, because we want that recognition from our peers. But comedy is such a supportive environment for the men. You know, when the men, they love to watch their you know, homie sets, and they love to like help them with tag. Like the men are just so tight. It's so weird. I just like always thought it's real gay. Like, I'm like, they act real gay. For straight people, they act real gay. Like, it's a very homoerotic environment. They don't want to admit it, but it really is. They just don't want to. It's like the no girls club, you know, sometimes. Yeah. It's a very boys club, but, you know, it's just part of it. I think you just have to accept it. And, you know, we develop regardless, and then we're better for it. So it's actually fine.
Now, Margaret, if you were on tour, do you prefer to be with a bunch of women, or do you prefer to be with a bunch of men, or a mix?
A mix. I mean, I'm always very kind of like all over the place. I got a lot of they them energy too, so a lot of they thems are in my crew, so that's really nice. But yeah, I'm very open to different people and very comfortable that way.
Yeah, I like a mix too. I love to have feminine energy on the stage. I don't like when it's just all men because my presentation is feminine, but my addiction is very alpha male. So I like to have women on the stage. They're coming in from a different angle because I think everybody's perspective is respected.
Right.
The problem with too many females on one show, they say, they all going to talk about the same thing. I said, well, all you men talk about the exact same thing. You talk about your damn penis and who you smashing.
Right.
You know, what's the difference? So it's sexist. It's still very sexist.
It's very sexist. It's true.
The sexist don't work on me because I got both sexes. So
that's
you know. Who was your biggest influence, Margaret, when you were coming up? Who was your biggest influence in comedy?
I think always Joan Rivers, you know?
Yeah. I love Joan too.
She was a real pioneer and also really supportive you know, throughout my kind of coming up, and she gave me a lot of work, and I ended up getting to take over Fashion Police after she died, which was a real honor, you know. But I always went to her if I had a bad show or, you know, something. Like, she just was so incredibly understanding, and she was really nurturing to other comedians, which I think is something she did for women, but also for men, and very open about her own insecurities too. Like, we were doing a show at Kennedy Center with all of the dudes, you know, the big, like, all of, like, Gary Shandling and, you know, Jon Stewart and all, you know, Bill Maher and all the guys. And she really wanted to do well. And so she was, like, really nervous. And so, you know, we were, like, in her dressing room beforehand and she's talking about it. And I'm like, how could you be nervous? You're a fucking legend. Like, nobody's better than you. They wish they, like, they wish they were you. But still, she still had that, was very open about that, you know, and I think that's what made her really powerful, is that she was had the ability to be vulnerable.
Do you think that that was instilled on her from, because Joan came out at a time when women were really discarded as comedians, you know, there was just, you had to be not attractive or fat. You know, something like that. You couldn't be pretty and funny. It just, not, and a woman.
Right.
Those
right.
three components just did not work.
That's right. Because so you were perceived as a threat if you were anything that, you know, could be construed as, like, sexually attractive, sexually vital. And Joan was, like, not even able to talk about her pregnancy when she was on stage, because that was considered vulgar, you know. So it's like, yeah, she really changed everything for women. And I personally was very affected by her just as another comedian. You know, she really took care of me. And so I really miss her, you know, but she lived a really long life. What a great life she had.
I never had the luxury of meeting her. I always wanted to meet her. But I figured, because I knew my journey as being a trans comedian for 25 years and nobody like me was around. So I could only imagine what it was like for her as a woman back then, because Phyllis Diller was not an attractive woman. So she played on that.
Yeah.
Joan Rivers was not a bad looking woman at all to me. You know,
yeah, she's lovely.
She had a bunch of circles. Yeah, but I figured, and she always dressed nice. So you had to either be fat to be the joke, or to be unattractive to be the joke, or to be a shadow to be the joke. But Joan was, she was never the shadow. She was always the chandelier. So
yeah, that's
she was,
right.
No, the wallpaper. She was the centerpiece.
That's
so
right.
I wonder, did she bring any of those insecurities, even when she became the Joan Rivers? Those insecurities probably were embedded in her from all her youth. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
because I still harbor insecurities. I still harbor insecurities from when they didn't speak to me, or when I was just a man in a dress. Even though I feel like I've overcome that. But every now and again, that little ugly shadow will peek his head in, like, maybe you're not good enough, or maybe you're not funny enough, or maybe you're not pretty enough. So I wondered that. You know, that's why I asked you, because we were different. We are anomalies.
That's right. It's also like, it's a combination of not fitting in, but then also imposter syndrome too. So it's like, we're almost our own internal bully in a sense, you know? So I think always, like, the greatest opposition for me always has been myself and my own fears and my own limited thinking of, like, what I could do, what's possible. It's always been my own doing. So I stand in my own way more than anything else.
Yeah, I would love to see Netflix put a show together with all the alternatives. When I say that, I mean Margaret Cho, Flame Monroe, just very unique comedians that all have different stories to tell.
Yeah.
And we all come in from and we all look like Baskin Robbins with 31 flavors or 33 flavors, you know? That would be fantastic. I think
that
would be a great show.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't want to be on an all. I don't want to be pigeonholed to ever say that I'm this kind of comedian or that kind of comedian. I can play any room at any time in front of any people. I just played a whole room full of rednecks that were all Trump supporters.
Amazing.
I talked about Trump. And I talked about Trump. And I didn't talk about his politics. I talked about his shape and his hair.
Oh, good.
I knew where I was at. And you know, a lot of comedians out here say, oh, I'm not changing my set. I'm not changing my set. I don't care who I'm in front of. I think that's irresponsible on a comedian's part, because you have to read the room that you're working.
Right.
You have to read the room.
Well, ultimately, you're an entertainer. Like, if you're exactly. an entertainer, that's what you do. You're here to entertain, and you can't allow anything like that to stand in your way. And it's a good challenge and a good exercise.
Yeah, and that's a great point. You're there to entertain, not to offend.
Right, exactly.
Now, you may say something offensive.
A little bit, but you need to sort of gauge what it is. But there's always, it makes it worth it. You know, people like to be offended. I think people really do like to be offended.
Well, they like for you to say stuff that they want to say, but it makes their skin crawl, and then they clutch their pearls. I'm like, ooh, I was thinking it, but I didn't have to say it. She said it.
They want to buy danger. People want to buy danger. And that's what is the appeal of stand-up comedy, is the dangerous element of it. And so I think that's really like a very rare gift. That's why it can't be replaced by AI. It won't ever be dangerous, because it's thinking outside of the parameters of what's normal, what's sane, what's right, and doing something fun with it.
That's the name of your next special, Margaret. Buying danger. Come buy danger.
Buy I'm some selling. Danger. Let's buy it. Let's buy some danger. We're making danger.
That is pretty dope. I really, really like that. That would be a great name. Oh my God. I am not going to keep you. I know you got things to do. I appreciate you so much. I want you to come down. I have a show every Monday night, because I didn't know you were in LA. I don't know why. Yeah. I thought you were still living in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Every Monday I'm at the Hollywood Laugh Factory for Free Voices at 7:30. We have a great time.
I'll come.
Great show. Come, and we'll let you stretch your legs, Margaret, and get it out. It's a great audience. And my audience is very diverse, and they love the people that we bring. So
fabulous.
I would love for you to come hang out with us one Monday.
Perfect.
I thoroughly enjoyed having this conversation with you. Thank you, Margaret, for being a great representation of the community. Thank you for being a fantastic comedian. Thank you for being a great woman. And thank you for being a fantastic American, because that's
thank
what people
you.
Keep forgetting, that we are Americans. I don't care what
that's
we look
right.
like, what size we are, what shape, we are all Americans.
That's right. Thank
we
you
We got to
so
remember
much.
That. Margaret Cho, thank you so much, my darling. Where can we follow you at? Give it to my fans where we can follow you everywhere.
You can follow me at Margaret Cho on X, at Margaret_Cho on Instagram, and The Margaret Cho on TikTok. And you can buy tickets at margaretcho.com, anybody who wants to come see me.
I'm coming to see you. I'm buying my tickets. I don't know where you're going to be, but I'm coming to see you, Margaret. I'm going to sit right in front of
you. I'm going to come see you.
I want you to come and see me. We're going to have a great time.
Listen,
I appreciate you. Thank you so much. Thank you, baby. I had to speak to your dog because she spoke a couple of times. Thank you, darling. What's her name?
Lucia Cacciarina.
Hi, Lucia. Thank you. Oh, my God. I can't even spell none of it, but I take it. Thank you for being so pleasant. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Don't miss an episode of Laugh and Learn. Listen and subscribe on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts. Laugh and Learn Podcast is a production of the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartRadio. Our executive producer is Tiffany Haddish. Our theme music is by the one and only Chrissy Payne. Thank you, guys. This is Flame and Roe. Don't forget to laugh, listen, and learn.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets,
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Minnie Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Minnie Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Listen to the highly anticipated 100th episode of Tank and Jay Valentine's R&B Money Podcast with artist Chris Brown.
Even working with you from Kerry Hilson, Adonis, back in the day, I was 15, 14 doing that album. So like I said, I was in school, like, okay, this is how you do it. This is how you make a song. There's a verse, a pre-chorus, and then a hook. I didn't know none of that.
You learned that over a summer, bro.
That's what it felt like.
That's what it felt like.
Listen to R&B Money on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.